Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program devoted to those of you who are open to the realization or have come to recognize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they are actually counterproductive, working against your interests. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-300-7645. I do want to continue a little bit with Bergoglio, the man who would become Pope Francis. It seems that Yahweh is also cleaning up after his mess. If you looked at the track of what is now a Category 4 hurricane called Joaquin, it is headed, the eye is headed to the places that the Pope soiled during his visit to America. Now, I'm not telling you that God messes with the weather. He's got other things to do, but just saying, that's where it's headed. Bergoglio wrote while he was in solitary confinement, while he was exiled, while he was banished by those who knew him best to a lightless, windowless cell that was painted blood red, had one image in it, that of painful death. He wrote in it that the Hebrew prophets felt the same pain. And I'm telling you, no, they didn't. I mean, this man is so utterly delusional. No, they didn't. There is nothing in common between one of the Hebrew prophets and this piece of human rubbish known as Pope Francis today, Bergoglio, when he was, in all essence, a convict, having been convicted by and sentenced to solitary confinement by those who knew him best. The Hebrew prophets weren't exiled. The Hebrew prophets were called by Yahweh, and they were empowered by Yahweh, authorized by Yahweh, and they spoke boldly to the people. That was exactly the opposite of Bergoglio. It is interesting, however, that those who know these men who would lay claims on being God's messenger, falsely, of course, those who knew him best declared to us what they were really like. Case with Bergoglio. He was best known to the Jesuit leadership in Argentina and above them in the Vatican. They exiled him. They said, no, this is a man not to be trusted. This is a man who needs a serious time out. Same thing was true with Paul. The people he preached to all rejected him. The first was the Galatians, and he writes, you know, why have you become so stupid in having rejected me so soon after I was there? Then he wrote the Corinthians, not once but twice, told them exactly the same thing, an angry diatribe. Thessalonica, his other initial visit, they also rejected him. And so in his letters to Thessalonica, he's telling the people that, you know, you were fools to have rejected me. When he writes his final letter to Timothy, he tells Timothy that everyone had rejected him. Those who knew him best, who actually knew him, knew that Paul was a fraud. Same thing is true with Muhammad. You can read it throughout the Quran. Those that were the neighbors of, those who actually heard Muhammad speak, those who witnessed his behavior, called him a fraud, a hypocrite, a con man. They said he was demon-possessed, that he was sadistic. It's the same thing true with a man who had become Pope. Those who knew him best knew that he was a fraud, that he was a very dangerous egomaniac. He went on to say that Jeremiah was the best example of what he is going through when he told God he was too young to carry out such a weighty responsibility. Yeah, he did. Jeremiah. His name is Yirmiyahu. But, of course, this pope would never say Yahweh's name. And he told Yahweh that he thought he was too young. And he said, you know, you can find somebody better than me. It wasn't he was rejecting a weighty responsibility. He just said, you know, I'm too young. You know, you ought to speak to somebody else. Somebody else will hold more credibility. You know, if they're older, more mature, if they've earned some credibility, that's the person you want to speak through. That's a natural human response. But you see, God likes to speak through people who know they aren't qualified, which made Yirmiyahu perfectly qualified. But of course, in the case of Bergoglio, he wasn't given any responsibility at all. He most certainly wasn't too young. He was 50 years old when he was put in solitary confinement, when he was exiled. Now he's in his 60s now. Most certainly wasn't too old or too young by any stretch of the imagination. No comparison. And at the time that he was in exile, he wasn't given a weighty responsibility. He has had all responsibility taken away from him. That's how twisted this man's mind was. And this is what he wrote. I'm not projecting. These are his own words. Then the person writing this article, who is a devout Catholic, says it's a depiction of what many Jesuits might recognize in themselves. No, it isn't. But then he says, contradiction is part of who we are, one of the lead Jesuits reports. And that's true. If you're a religious individual, contradiction is what you are. Religion is nothing but a litany of contradictions. But these contradictions often confused Catholics in Argentina, who pegged Bergoglio as a retrograde individual. 2 years into his exile, and that's because he bonded with the military junta, the fascist there. And then, so they assumed that he was of like mind with the fascists. His dictatorial style was fascist. But then he came out as a communist. And he's still a communist. Living lives of contradiction that are self-serving is the mainstay of religious individuals. 2 years into his exile, in June of 1992, Bergoglio was named auxiliary bishop in Buenos Aires. He had grown close to the city's archbishop, who personally petitioned Pope John Paul for his release from what was, in essence, a prison cell. Ah, yes, politics. 6 years later, in 1998, Bergoglio was appointed Archbishop of Buenos Aires, the powerful Catholic, most powerful Catholic in Argentina. Oh, man, he was back. The power-hungry man who spoke at the UN about how power-hungry individuals are polluting the earth, the most power-hungry of all, was back in power. It was a dramatic reversal from the solitude and suffering that he endured in solitary confinement in Cordoba. As I read a section of Untying Hearts and Minds, my eyes grew wide. The Jesuit constitution on which the guidelines for Jesuit behavior are based, this author says, quote, anyone seen to be a cause of division among those who live together, estranging them either among themselves or from their head, ought with great diligence to be separated from that community as a pestilence which can infect it if a remedy is not quickly applied, end quote. So that is why Bergoglio was removed. He was causing division. Because from his perspective, only he mattered. He was a dictator. He was power hungry. He was an egomaniac. But it is interesting, of course, that the Jesuits, their greatest desire is to be uniform. That anyone who would be the least bit counter to the culture of uniformity would be separated from that community. They're seen as a pestilence. It's been true with Roman Catholicism from its very beginning. Any critic is a heretic, a pestilence that can infect the entire body and has to be done away with. But it, the way he prays, this author wrote of Bergoglio, of course. Now, keep in mind, he is a devout Catholic writing the article. The way he thinks and act were all formed by the society of the Jesuits. And like all Jesuits, he believes that being good requires more than avoiding conflict and putting a few coins in the collection faith. Faith is a daily discipline requiring spiritual exercises for the soul, even or especially when your soul is suffering far away from home, in solitary confinement, in a little blood-red room. It's amazing where this man was and the hatred that grew out of that place, his lust for power and revenge. And it's also amazing that the world doesn't see it. Blindly following him as if he were godly. Millions of Roman Catholics coming to his side. In all essence, worshiping him. It's how easy people are fooled. When the Toralist one comes upon the scene, he will be even more readily accepted by an ignorant and irrational world that won't bother to think of any of these things, that won't even care about any of these things. Evidence won't matter. Truth won't matter. Reason will be considered ridiculous. This article concludes, I don't know what happened to Bergoglio during the dark night in Cordoba. I likely never will. I do. I shared that with you in the first program we did on this horrible individual. He was demon-possessed. Turning now to an interesting turn of events. In the time, this is an interesting article because of the Russian now involvement in Syria. This author, I think, has some insights worth sharing with you. He begins, in the time that it would take an Israeli tourist to finish breakfast, Russia deployed close to 1,000 Russian Special Operations soldiers in Syria. No UN resolution, no discussion, no nothing. President Assad, the genocidal mass murderer of hundreds of thousands of Sunnis, merely invited the Russians to come, and they came. By the way, he is not a genocidal mass murderer, but his father was. Correct is that President Bashar al-Assad, while he and his father have killed thousands of people, genocidal is not appropriate to apply to either of them. Genocidal is appropriate to apply to those who want him out, the fundamentalist Sunni Muslims, those that are have rallied to his side, Hezbollah and Iran, and their treatment of Sunnis, that would be genocidal. The annihilation of Christians and throughout this region would be genocidal. But Assad actually protected the Christians, and as he did the Zoroastrians, and the same would be true with Saddam Hussein. So you really need to be careful when you're writing, because it will destroy your credibility on other issues. And of the hundreds of thousands that have died, the majority of them were not killed by Assad or even those loyal to Assad. So it says here, the Russians came in with mobile anti-aircraft missile batteries, various Russian special forces, and nuclear submarines armed with enough nuclear bombs on one submarine to incinerate the, this is the, practically the whole world. I think maybe he's got one too many definite articles in there. If ever a terrorist Palestinian state is formed in the West Bank, any Palestinian terrorist president can and will just as easily invite the Russians into their new country within a day. Before Israel or anyone will know it, the Russians and their anti-aircraft missiles will be along the green line. The moment that happens, start saying Kaddish for Israel. Far-fetched? Well, despite the accelerating proliferation of jihadi groups faster than you can say Allahu Akbar, and the Obama's cash infusion of $150 billion into the Iran leading state sponsor of terror. By the way, Iran is not the leading state sponsor of terror. Saudi Arabia has that, and in terms of arming them, it'd be Qatar. In terms of actual integration within the state organizations, it would be Pakistan. So I would say they stand maybe in the fourth position there. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is still talking about a Palestinian state, with European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Moghirna, in Jerusalem. Prime Minister Netanyahu stressed his commitment to a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Netanyahu declared, "I support the vision of two states for two peoples, a demilitarized Palestine state that recognizes the Jewish state." Okay, well, that's never going to happen. There will never be a Muslim country that recognizes Israel's right to exist. Not going to happen. So that's ridiculous. And a demilitarized Muslim state, that's like saying jihad isn't part of Islam. Not a prayer. But he is right in the sense that the Russians could appear in a moment's notice. I mean, you have to think this one through, though. What's the difference between the Russians bombing in Syria and the Americans bombing in Syria? What gives the Americans the right to bomb in Syria, and that's right, and the Russians don't have the right to bomb in Syria, and that's wrong? The Americans did not have an ally in Syria. We had no vested interest in Syria. The Russians had an ally in Syria. It is appropriate for nations, under certain circumstances, to protect an ally. In this particular case, the Russians would be right in protecting their ally, Bashar al-Assad. Not because he's a good guy, he's not, but because the alternative to him, those who would usurp his power, are infinitely worse. And that's where the United States is wrong here, and the Russians are right. The United States wants Bashar al-Assad gone. When Bashar al-Assad was in power, there was no Syrian refugee problem. There was no refugee problem in Europe. There weren't hundreds of thousands of Muslims dead. There weren't Christians, Zoroastrian little girls kidnapped, enslaved, and gang-raped, sold as objects. Before the United States decided that it would depose Saddam Hussein because he was a bad guy and wasn't smart enough to think about, well, who's going to replace them? That happened to be the Iranians. Before the United States decided that they would bomb Libya, not smart enough to recognize who would replace Muammar Gaddafi, and that would be a gang of Islamic terrorists. People lived in Syria in relative peace, as they did in Iraq, as they did in Libya. But because of America's bombings and intervention, this entire world is at war. And the Russians are right. We're wrong. So Israel's in quite a predicament here. It means that if the world forces it, and it will, to give up the West Bank just as it has given up Gaza, the Muslims there will renege on all of their agreements just as the Muslims have thus far, and all of the Osco Accords, they have cheated on every aspect of it. And then they will blame the Jews for their own cheating because it's impossible for a Muslim to be accountable. And it's possible for a Muslim to be peaceful, so they'll engage in jihad against Israel, and Israel will defend itself until the world engages, and the world will engage on behalf of the Muslims. And this is the plight of Israel. So this particular author, who doesn't like Netanyahu, says, you know, Israel's worst enemy are Israelis. And I would say the Israeli government is a foe of what is in Israel's best interest, and that the government of Israel is, I've always said, is loonier than a two-headed goonie bird. Nonetheless, it is Yahweh's favorite place on earth, and they are his chosen people, and he is going to reconcile his relationship with them, and those who are supportive of Israel, at least as it ought to be, Yahweh will bless, and those who are opposed to it, Yahweh will slight. So it is important to know what is happening. Now, speaking of what's happening, can you imagine the mess that the Obaminator has caused in Syria? Between, I don't want to blame it totally on him. Half the blame goes to George Bush. George Bush stupidly, absolutely moronically, counterproductively invaded Afghanistan and Iraq. Both places are a complete disaster. The Taliban just took over one of the largest and most important cities in Afghanistan. And even with Americans now re-engaging on the front lines in special forces and America's warplanes bombing the city, the Taliban controls it. In fact, the Taliban is out on the street taking selfies with the jubilant population who welcomed them back. And, of course, those that America armed, just as we didn't learn in Iraq, just as we didn't learn in Vietnam, those Americans armed, well, they abandoned their weapons and fled. So that the Taliban and many of the other units there are in association now in calling themselves the Islamic State have seized the weaponry that America provided, and they hold the town. And America is now doing everything that it can to bomb them into submission and to lead the Afghani forces to retake the town, but thus far, to no avail. It's not just as if we've accomplished nothing. No, we've made things worse in Afghanistan by every possible measure. Drug production, abuse of women, the onslaught of terrorism, everything that could be done to make that place worse, radically increasing the weaponry and therefore the carnage. We made a mess. And we made a mess, of course, in Iraq. All for the same reasons George Bush invaded, based upon a pile of lies, all of which he knew true were not true at the time. And look now, a country that had very few terrorist acts and a country that had would give no quarter to any Islamic terrorist is now the most besieged by Islamic terrorism of any place on earth. And mass migrations out of that country, annihilations of minority religions, you could not have a worse situation, all because America invaded. And yet we don't get it. But now it has become a world conflict. Yahweh predicted this. He called it the Magog War. He told us when this war would hit its crescendo, which is that it would continue to ramp up until the beginning of the tribulation as to when it would be in full swing. He talked about the fall of Damascus and the fall of Syria at large, greater Syria, which would also include Iraq, leading up to this, and then a flood of Muslims into Israel. He predicted every bit of it. But then he said in the second phase of that war that it would go nuclear, and that a third of the remaining people on earth would die. And look at what happened. What you have now is Russia and China on behalf of Shia Islam, Iran, and Syria. And you have America and Europe on behalf of Sunni Islam, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, et al. And so the world is engaged in this war. You now have the Russians and the Americans bombing Syria. One allegedly to depose Assad, the other to protect him, to defend him. How do you think that's going to turn out? Can you imagine being so stupid that you couldn't figure this out? That you didn't recognize that your invasion of Iraq had caused this? That your awakening program was the stimulus? That by deposing Saddam Hussein, you opened this horrid religious cesspool that's poured out on the Middle East and now is flooding into Europe and soon into America? That you can't accept responsibility? And then when somebody says, you know, we're going to engage because we need to defend Assad, because those that would replace him would be vastly worse. America has a conniption fit. And tongue lashes the one person who's actually got that part right. Then even hear this article about, well, the vulnerability of Israel to this same thing. Well, yes, that's true. But I think that, and God has stated, that America is vastly more vulnerable. Israel is vastly more vulnerable to America than it is to Russia. There is no woe message to Russia, but there is one to America. And it's because it's those that you think are your friend, that pretend to be your friend. It's the wolf in sheep's clothing that is always the most dangerous. You know, I can cite the fact that if you do a historical research of deficits, you'll find that they grow more rapidly under Republican administrations than they do under Democratic administrations. You can find that no matter where you look, that it's the people that you think have your back that have a knife in it. And this is the case of the United States. Rather than worrying about Russia here, we ought to be worried about America here. But think of the stupidity of the Abominator and his actions within Syria and Libya. And having made an absolute mess of Libya, does the same thing in Syria. And now the world is on the brink of world war and nuclear war as a consequence of all of this. God tells us that it's ultimately over the next 15 years going to wipe out half of the world's population. One quarter of the world's population in the first phase, one third of the remaining in the second phase. The only thing that could do that is a war where the entire world takes sides. Now, Yahweh would normally not even bother to tell us these things. A, because they take place during the tribulation when the only thing that he's interested in is the remnant of his children that will be reengaged and reaffirmed, renewed in the covenant. But in this particular case, the catalyst for this war is the Islamic hatred for an onslaught upon Israel, which is why he tells us about it. And who is the most active player in that regard? Arming Israel's enemies. The United States of America. And so that's why this is such an interesting time. We are literally reading future history. Now, it's interesting, of course, that with the Russians bombing Sunni Muslims, and thus far America says they're not bombing the Islamic State, they're bombing other Islamic groups in opposition to Assad, which means they're bombing the Nusra Front. The reality is that what that's going to do is Russia is going to further isolate itself from Sunni Muslims on behalf of Shia Muslims. And that's only in Russia's interest in the sense that they have so much interest in the gas and oil reserves around the Caspian Sea, and therefore they're financially intertwined with Iran, one of their largest trading partners. But, you know, this Shia Muslims only represent 15% of Islam. So what can the Russians do to resolve this conflict? Because they don't want to be in conflict with Sunni Islam, even though they want to be supportive of Shia Islam because of their relationship with Iran. Well, that's interesting. What they need to do then is do the same thing they did in Syria, in the West Bank, and in Gaza. And the moment they do that, then Sunni Muslims will forget the fact that they bombed Sunni militias in Syria and will applaud the Russians for having come to their aid against Israel. This author recognizes the truth of that, and we should as well. The world is positioning itself for world war. It is also interesting that when Russia made this decision to engage in Syria, and they had no reason not to. The United States is demeaning Russia everywhere. And so it's when you continue to kick dirt in someone's face, when you continue to push them into a corner and bludgeon them, they're going to respond. And so what Putin is doing is not only predictable, it's what you would expect. What Obama did to put him into this position is stupid. But the fact of the matter is that we pushed them to this point. This is the consequence of America's belligerence. Now, as we continue this, we should recognize that we have a major problem in America. And the major problem in America is that almost no one is willing to discuss Islam. No one is willing to discuss the counterproductive nature of the U.S. military. No one is willing to be accountable for the mess that we have made, and therefore to learn the lessons of interventionism that have so gone so bloody wrong. Is a win-win for the Taliban. Whatever happens now, even if the jihadists are expelled by the army in a counteroffensive, which took place to some degree during the night, they will leave with booty and publicity. Taliban fighters have emptied the banks in Kunduz, and they have seized weapons, including armed vehicles, and they have gained a great propaganda victory. Hello, Kirk. How are you this fine day?
Good morning. It's raining in California. It's about three drops, but it's raining.
So far we haven't had a great influence of El Nino, have we?
No. Well, down in L.A. they said they had a big storm, but nothing up here where all the water's stored, where we actually can store it. But regardless.
But you finally got the fires out, though, didn't you?
They're certainly all under control. I don't know of any that are burning, spreading. So they've got them down to almost nothing. So that's what we generally do every fall. So
it's a pretty amazing report on Bergoglio, the man who became a pope. The Jesuits knew him quite well, and they did not like him very much. It is amazing that this man, with his troubled past, rose to power so quickly as a pope, and it's also amazing the legacy he's carrying with him, the influence of having been banished and exiled by the Jesuits.
Mm-hmm. Is that satanic? I mean, what do you attribute that to? Because he obviously, they didn't like him.
Oh, yeah.
They can't go to power without help.
Yeah, well, he did ingratiate himself with some people along the way, so it's... You know, when he was banished by the Jesuits, he reached out to a non-Jesuit individual who was empowered and old and became his deputy. And then when he died, was in line to
take over.
Yeah, take over and be the highest ranked Argentine Roman Catholic. But he positioned himself perfectly to be nominated for Pope. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a fast rise to power for somebody who had been banished and exiled, and whose writings were so deeply troubled.
Yeah, I missed a little of it, so forgive me on that, because I got up late for the first time, and I said, oh, gosh. And so I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you a question about, when Putin made his speech, a while back, a couple weeks ago, I said, you know, this guy is going to be, has to be, is concerned about the influx of Muslims invading Europe, because he's part of Europe, and he's right above the stands. So the stands, even if they didn't come to Russia, they would fill up, repopulate all the stand countries for. And they're right on his border, and he's got nowhere to go.
Right.
So he's going to have to deal with this issue now. So, and then he said in his speech, I think it was yesterday or the day before that I read, where he said, you know, he's got 24,000 Russians, Muslims that are in this war, and they're going to come home. And then he's got all those others that are going to be going back home after they finish whatever they think they're going to finish.
Mm-hmm.
He's scared to death.
Well, I think he's just astute in this regard. In fact, Trump gave him an A- or A for leadership. he's in a, I mean, I don't want to make the impression that I'm a Putin fan, because I'm not. I think Putin's
a
tendency.
He's the only one who's thinking rationally through this whole thing.
But his statements at the UN, where he exposed Obama, were astute. In fact, a number of Republican candidates have recognized that what he said about Obama and American foreign policy, and it goes back to his predecessor, Bush, is true, that America has been the lone superpower in the world, and we have made the world much worse through our involvement. Everything we've touched has turned to mush, and worse. I mean, this entire Muslim immigration issue is entirely the fault of the United States. The fact that most of the Islamic world right now is either engaged in religious civil war or is on the brink of it and is armed to the teeth.
Yeah.
You know, and that the entire world now is divided. You know, you've got not only Russia and China on the side of Iran and Syria, but and the United States and Europe on the side of Turkey and of Qatar and of Saudi Arabia. But you've got America arming both sides. You know, can you imagine? Right now we're flying, both America and Russia are flying uncoordinated missions, military missions in Syria. And, you know, Russia, to make this announcement and to coordinate it in terms of intelligence, did so in Baghdad because they've got a vastly better relationship with the Iraqi government than does America because of their relationship with Iran. Oh my, what a mess.